Let's make today the day you get one step closer to becoming the parent you've always wanted to be and the parent your children deserve. Hi, and welcome to Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. I am your host, Erin Taylor, and I have wanted to help parents and children literally since I was 11 years old. I created this podcast to help you make a stronger, healthier, deeper connection to your child, to understand the inevitable challenges a little better, and learn some new ways to navigate them when they occur. Thank you for spending some time with me. Now let's get this show started. Hello and welcome back to the show. This is episode 610, and I am really excited to have my new friend, Mary Grace Gardner, here with us. And Mary Grace is the founder of The Young Professionista and a college admissions and career coach who works with students to find their passions and write compelling application essays so that they can apply to the college of their dreams with confidence. She served as part of the UC Berkeley admissions team, earned acceptance to colleges like Yale, Johns Hopkins, and UCLA, and mentored students across the globe over the past 10 years. She specializes in helping students learn what they might be interested in for their future careers by supporting them to launch passion projects using growth mindset, design thinking, lean, innovation, leadership, and project management. Mary Grace has been featured in Business Insider, CNBC, Yahoo Finance, U.S. News and World Report, and Fast Company. She lives in the San Francisco Bay Area with her husband and two children. Welcome, Mary Grace.
Hi, Erin. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
I am excited to talk to you. I'm not sure that in any of my over 600 episodes that I've specifically spoken about the college admissions process. So I'm really excited for our conversation today.
Thanks for having me here.
So can you tell my audience a little bit about how you came to be helping families with this very important part of the growing up process?
Sure. So this is an area that I am passionate about, and yet it was not something I intended to have a business in. So let me start kind of back in kind of my high school phase and kind of that transition and journey for me. So when I was in high school, I was a very active student. I loved learning. I loved so many topics. I graduated valedictorian. I was president of all sorts of clubs. I was in all sorts of extracurriculars, and yet I had no idea what I wanted to be when I grew up. I remember when they were interviewing me for the school newspaper, one of the questions the vice principal asked me was, "What do you want to be?" And I froze because I had to give an answer. I had to say what I wanted to be. They couldn't just leave it blank. And so I blurted out, "I either want to be a math professor or a molecular biologist," which are two completely different things. But those are what I was interested in. And so people expected that I would know exactly what I want. And the challenge for me was I loved so many different topics. I could see myself as a mathematician. I thought, you know, women are so underrepresented in math. That's what I want to be. Oh, but I also love genetics and I also love writing. And so I had that difficulty myself personally trying to figure out what I wanted to be and what I wanted to do. And then as I went through college, I went to UCLA and got my degree in pure math. And then I went on to Berkeley and got my degree in public health, my graduate degree in maternal child health and international health. Throughout that journey, as I was discovering what it is I wanted to do, each step of the way, what guided me was what I was passionate about, what I wanted to learn more about. And my parents were just super supportive of me figuring it out. And so as I, let me talk to you about my corporate career first before I talk about the education journey. So from the corporate side, I got my degree from Berkeley, and then I moved on to take on a role in hospital leadership. So for a decade, I worked in hospital strategy. I worked as a chief of staff to a hospital CEO. And then in the last 2 years, I worked as in a surgical robotics company as chief of staff and strategy lead to a medical officer. So my whole pathway, I was not necessarily thinking I will be a college admissions and career coach as well. What happened in parallel was as I was going through my college journey, I was accepted to schools like Yale and Johns Hopkins, Emory. I graduated from undergraduate and graduate school debt-free on academic scholarships, and I was part of the UC Berkeley admissions team. One thing they asked of is for the highest performing students in the program was to be part of the admissions team. So what that meant was I had the opportunity to make decisions on who got accepted, who got denied, who got scholarships, who didn't. And so what that led to was as I was pursuing my healthcare career, I was constantly getting people who wanted to pick my brain over college admissions. How did I do it? What did I see when I was part of the admissions team? Can I give feedback for their students? Can I give feedback on their nieces or nephews in that process? And so what I was doing was this was pretty much something I was doing extracurricularly as I was pursuing my other career. I was taking calls before work, after work, during lunch, and doing it for free. And then realizing over the years, the same questions are coming up over and over again, and there must be a better system. I'm a big systems type of thinker. And so I realized there might be different ways for me to help these folks out. And through the past 10 years, that's exactly kind of how it all started. I was first helping folks out a little bit here, a little bit there, but then I realized from kind of my own lens and strategy of what I think is most helpful to students, it was a combination of three different lenses that I brought together. One was as the student myself, who went through that journey of working really hard, but not knowing what she wanted to be. And then that lens of being on an admissions team and actually having that firsthand experience of what it's like and seeing the amazing students who come through. And it's not always the student who has the perfect scores or test grades that get chosen. So that lens. But the third was as a hiring manager, because I think at the end of the day, it's not just about getting into college. It's also about making sure that your child is pursuing a career that they love. And I've had the opportunity to hire all sorts of roles from executives to doctors, to engineers, to lawyers, to all sorts of roles. And I infuse my practice with that lens of what would make a student successful in the job market. So that is what led me into this work.
I love that journey. And I think it's so interesting and inspiring. And when I first learned about what it is that you do and how you help students, well, in this case particularly, focus on getting into the college of their dreams through writing a really solid essay. I think solid probably isn't the right word for it. That's not a good enough description of what it is that I think you do. But what occurred to me is that you're really kind of teaching them about marketing. Mm-hmm. Because you're really teaching them how to figure out who it is they are. So it's almost like you're helping them to figure out their product, which is them. Because when you are applying to college, you are the product. And you're selling the product to the potential buyer, which is the college who says, yes, we want you. So I thought it was really interesting that it really seems like you are teaching them about marketing. And I'm sure that never even comes up. Does it ever come up that that's actually what they're doing? They're learning how to market themselves, which will also help them in their careers because they always will have to market themselves.
You know, when I teach my students, it's infused with things that maybe the terms I might not be sharing with them because they might be a little difficult to understand in that phase. So when I'm talking to them about growth mindset, innovation, performance improvement, marketing, those are phrases where you're thinking, that's more corporate speak, right? For the students, when we're talking about their journeys. So there's two ways that I help students. One is through helping them figure out what they're passionate about through development of passion projects. We can talk more about that in a bit. And the second is through helping them to discover what is their own story. And as we're going through that journey together of figuring out what is their story, what I have students define for themselves are what are the points in their lives or experiences that informed who they are. It's reflection. A lot of it is so much reflection of what type of person they are, what type of person do they want to become, what kinds of learnings have they had over time, and how do they connect the dots to create the story of who they are today. A lot of times students don't even know, right? They just live the life and they're going to class, they're going to sports, they're doing whatever it is, but they're not looking back and thinking, how does this all fit and make me who I am today? How did that one challenge I had in the family change how I might communicate? Or how might that one conflict in class, how had that created more confidence in myself, right? They're not really thinking of it in that way. And so when we actually work together to kind of figure out what are those different pieces in their lives that make them who they are, what I ask them to think through is, what is your statement about yourself? What is it that you're wanting to communicate about yourself? Because the narrative that you have, in the narrative that someone may have as they're reading your essay, you as a student can control that, right? You can be intentional and deliberate about what it is that someone is taking away from reading a 350 or 650 word essay about you. And so rather than kind of phrasing it as marketing, what I share with my students is, let's figure out how can you control your narrative? How can you be more deliberate about what message about yourself that you're wanting to put out in the world? And how do you make sure it's aligned with who you are and who you want to become?
That's fabulous. And I can understand why you wouldn't speak about it in terms of marketing to them, because I'm thinking about my rising junior and the whole concept of thinking about college. Just the concept of thinking about it right now is just overwhelming to her. So I have to give it to her in little tiny, tiny, tiny bite size pieces, because we do have to, you know, because she does want to go to college, we do have to start taking the initial steps, but she doesn't feel like she's ready. So I can understand why talking about marketing yourself is not necessarily going to resonate with every student.
And essentially, though, I think what it is, though, is when you apply to anything, you're applying to a job, you're applying to college, essentially you are marketing yourself. You're trying to answer the question, why should they pick you? Why are you special? Why are you different? Or how can you align with either that job, or how do you align with the mission of that school? And so essentially you are marketing yourself. What I try to be careful with, though, with my students is having them understand the difference between saying and doing things that just look good for the college, right?
Yes.
They think that people want to hear, or they think that an admissions team officer might want to see, and focus more on who they are. So being able to highlight those aspects of themselves and being chosen for that versus trying to fit into what they think the mold should be. One, because on the other side, it's totally obvious when a student does that. But I know from the student side, it feels really icky to not feel like you're being your authentic self. I see students struggle with that, where they feel compartmentalized because they feel like they have to do what they think is expected of them versus allowing themselves to fully be themselves and letting that be what shines in an application.
So I have a question for you that just came to me, and I don't know if you even can have an answer to this, because I don't even know if you had access to the data when you were in that role, but I'm curious anyway, in case you did have an answer to this. When you were in that admissions role, did you have the access / privilege of seeing the pattern of who got accepted and then how they did, you know, like if they were well matched to the school once they got there and then they were thriving, or, you know, it wasn't a good, it didn't, you weren't sure it was a good match, and it shows that they're not thriving. Like, I don't know if you would even have access to that as an admissions person.
You know, that's interesting, the kind of longitudinal study to see whether or not it was the right fit or not. You know, colleges do have some metrics, right, regarding what kind of jobs people have at the end, or how long it takes for the student to actually graduate from college, or the dropout rate that they've got as well, right? Those different metrics. Yeah. What I haven't seen, which I think could be really fascinating though, is having a qualitative study as well, where students answer questions like that of, do you regret choosing this? Was this the right fit for you? Did you get what you thought you were going to get, right? Because I don't think, I haven't seen, and as an alumni of different colleges, I have never received a survey, right, that asked those types of questions. But I do think it's important, because when I actually talk to adults about their college experiences, many of them have told me, you know, if I could have done it differently, I probably would have done this instead. You know, if I went to a big mega school, I probably would have thrived better in a small liberal arts college. Or, you know, I studied this major and it was so important at the time, but I'm not using it at all in my career, and I should have studied this other thing. So there wasn't, and I would love that. That would have been super helpful. There wasn't data accessible to me at that time, but I don't know if it even exists where there is those sorts of databases where they're collecting that sort of information, because it could be quite helpful, I think, in helping then high school students kind of think through and navigate what might be a good fit. Because so much around good fit oftentimes is SAT scores and GPA, and then that determines where you apply. But I think there are more factors than that, mm-hmm. and oftentimes are not discussed. And so I do think it's an important conversation, but I haven't seen anything published regarding that from different colleges.
Yes, I agree with you. I have never had been given or asked to take any survey from my two colleges that I went to about anything even close to that. So if you're a college admissions person, maybe you want to be the first one to take the lead in that kind of a qualitative study, because I think that would be really interesting. And it makes me think about a book I'm currently reading, Quiet by Susan Cain. And she's talking about introverts. Mm-hmm. And in part of the study, or part of the early book, because I'm only a couple chapters in so far, but it's very fascinating. But she went to the campus of Harvard, and she interviewed a couple of students, and her focus was introversion versus extroversion. And all the students were talking about how hard it is or would be to be an introverted person on a campus like that, because it's almost like the energy in the air is all about marketing yourself all the time. It's how you dress. It's how you show up in the classroom. It's who you sit next to. It's who you're socializing with at the happy hour. And it's how often you contribute in your group meetings and raise your hand in class and all this kind of stuff. And so I think it's really interesting, because there are so many different aspects of us as human beings that we could be more this way or more that way or less like this or something in our personalities, our natures, our interests, our abilities, all of it. And even down to whether we'd be a good fit, a bigger school or a smaller school would be a good fit, where the location would be, how far from home. There's so many factors to take in to consideration to find a good fit. And it's way more, as you and I both know, way more than just GPA and SAT and all that kind of stuff. It's way, way more.
I think those are just such important factors. And, you know, oftentimes, speaking of Myers-Briggs, there's a notion of extroverts becoming more successful, right, than the introverts. And there's all these tips out there of how introverts can be more like extroverts. And what I just want to throw in there is, In my work in hospital leadership, was when we all were taking our Myers-Briggs, there were multiple executives, successful executives, who actually all scored on the introversion scale, right? So all of them were self-identified as introverts. And so I just want to throw out there that while sometimes we see the narrative out there that extroverts are what you should be more like, I know plenty of highly successful introverts as well. And so not that either is wrong or bad. It's just being able to understand kind of where you fall and what your preferences are, right? It's all about preferences and what you thrive off in terms of your energy. And then knowing that, how can you still have a successful time in college, right? So in that particular book, I know that I've read excerpts of it as well, is that students can sometimes feel like they have to be something that they're not in order to be able to be successful. And I think being thoughtful about how can they still be who they are and still have that successful transition is possible. So I just wanted to throw that thought in there. And also some at the end state that I've seen where there's still some successful people out there, even though they might not exhibit the things that are traditionally seen as more successful.
Thank you for highlighting that, because yes, she does talk in her book about, she names specific individuals who are wildly successful leaders that we know in our culture, in our society, who are solidly on the introvert side of things. So thanks for highlighting that. Another thing that I have talked to kids about, and I was curious what your experience was as the young professionista. I think there's so much pressure to get into the right school, and there's just so much pressure when a young person is on this college admissions track. And I have said this to so many young people, friends of my kids or families that I work with, just people that I come across. I try to remind them, the school that you go to, there's so much focus on getting into the right school. But if the school you choose turns out to not be the best match for you, you can always change. Like, you're not signing your name in blood anywhere. You're not branding their letters on your forearm somewhere. The pressure of this decision should not be as high as it is for some kids. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, it is, but it isn't. Do the best you can. What I tell them is do the best you can to try to find a school that feels like it matches you and who you know yourself to be. And if it turns out that that wasn't a good choice, you can always find another school for next year. What are your thoughts about that?
I agree. I think there's so much focus on getting into college. And then this is taking off the college hat and putting on the hiring manager hat, is that we get resumes for all sorts of roles, and someone coming from a highly prestigious college, that's not enough to get the job, right? So you'll see that and think, okay, that's nice. Now let's see what else is on the resume, right? So I think what I tell my students is that it's what matters more when you actually get into college is what you make out of the experience, right? So when you're in college, you essentially get your foot in the door. Opportunities are there, but they just will not happen to you, right? And so when you're there, it's also about the experience you get making friends. It's the professors you actually interact with and talk to after class, not just the actual classroom teaching experience, but are there opportunities to work with your professors, things that you intern, volunteer, the experiences and exposures that you get, and maximizing that experience when you're actually on the college campus is what matters. And so say you, if I were to look at a recent grad who came from a quote unquote prestigious college, but had none of those experiences versus someone who came from a quote unquote less prestigious college, but they had great internship experience. They took on leadership roles as part of whatever committee or club they were at school. They were highly active in school. They did things while there. I would probably choose the latter, right? And it's not so much where the person came from, but more so of what kind of experiences did they get when they were actually there. And so I agree that there is a lot of pressure. And so what I focus on with students really too is not just how to get into the top 10 schools. It's how do you get into an ideal college that's the right fit for you. And that could be an Ivy League. That might could be your local state school. It could be something completely different or in between. And I think that we need to pay attention to those other factors, because the name brand itself does not necessarily guarantee success, nor does it guarantee happiness. And I'm very big on the notion of students thriving when they're in college and not just chasing a name when it's not going to lead to them being happy.
That's beautiful advice. And it's so, so, so true. And it's so easy for parents when they're caught, and kids when they're in the thick of this, those last couple of years of high school, to forget and lose sight of all that important awareness that you just shared. So thank you very much for that.
I think one of the parents that I'm working with this year, something that I loved that they wrote about, just we're at the time of this recording, we are still emerging from the pandemic, and it was a tough year for her child, and her child is thriving. Perfect scores, doing very well. But the thing she highlighted was that she was worried they weren't having family game night because there was no time to be able to do anything outside of academics and everything that was going on, and wanting the child to actually enjoy their senior year and not just feel so much pressure. And I thought, this is beautiful. this is the kind of family that I particularly enjoy working with, right? Is that the student, yes, was doing what they need to do, and they were doing great. And there was still also this focus on having space in their lives and joy and happiness and connection. And I think that's such an important aspect to be thinking through as well, and not getting so caught up. And I know it's hard. It's easier to say than it is to do, right? To not get caught up in the extreme pressure and expectation and that whole whirlwind that occurs. I think, though, it's such a critical time in our children's lives that we also want to be able to be fully present for the things outside of that whole college preparation world as well.
Such a good point. I was thinking about a friend of ours, and their daughter wanted to, he and his mom, and I think his grandmother, went to an Ivy League school. You know, generations of the same school. And so when she was in high school, she just figured, I'm going to go to that school. She thought she really wanted to, but then she also figured, that's kind of my family heritage. That's where I'll go. And so she pushed herself so hard in school academically, pushed. And she stretched into classes that were really, really hard for her, and ended up getting B's in the harder classes where she could have breezed through and got A's in the maybe one step down kind of classes. And so anyway, she applied to the school and other schools too. It wasn't like she just applied to that one, but she ended up not getting in, and she was shell-shocked. She was shocked. She was hurt. She didn't understand. Generations of my family went to the school. How did I not get in? I worked my butt off academically for the last 4 years. What in the heck? And so it was really hard for her to accept this disappointment that she had. And she ended up going to a state school. This Ivy League school was 6 or 7 hours from their house of a drive. She ended up going to the state school that's 20 minutes down the road. And here's where I find it gets a little bit interesting. The fall of her freshman year, she ended up having to have this, she had this weird medical, just this freak medical thing happen where she had to be rushed to the hospital and have emergency surgery. And so she had to call 911 or her roommate or whatever, and she had to be rushed to the hospital. And her parents, because they were 20 minutes away, just rushed to the hospital, and they were there with her immediately. And then the recovery from this situation took several weeks, as I recall. And so she was able to stay home and recuperate. And she was 20 minutes from school. And this was pre-pandemic, years before the pandemic, where signing on to a Zoom class was not even a thing. I don't even know if Zoom existed back then. So she was able to recuperate, recover, get herself healthy, and go back to school. And her parents were able to be there with her in her moment of need. And so as soon as that happened, I thought, look at that. She was so shocked and disappointed, discouraged, unhappy that she set her sights on this school and it didn't pan out and they didn't choose her. And then my goodness, look how well things ended up to serve her highest interest and need, her best interests. And I think about that all the time when I see kids applying to colleges and, you know, they've applied to 10 schools and this is their dream school. And then these are the ones that they hope to get into. And these are their really easy, I'm sure I'll get into their schools. And then I just think, wow, you know, the college you go to, whether you go to college or not, but if you go to college, the college you go to has ramifications that are far beyond anything anybody can see in this moment today, right now. I met my husband when I was a freshman in college. And the way I chose my college, very strange. I was working in my part-time job in a department store, and it was Thanksgiving time. Christmas time. So, you know, the seasonal workers were coming in. And one of the people who came in to work in my department was a college student. And I said, oh, you know, where do you go? What's happening? And she told me the name of her school, which was Drexel University, where I went. And it was so strange. I was a junior and I remember hearing the word and going, oh, Drexel, that's where I have to go. That's where I'm going to school. That is my school. And I just knew in the core of my being that that's where I would end up. No ifs, ands, or buts, no doubt, no hesitation. I didn't know anything about the school. All I knew was it was 2 hours from my house. I didn't know how big it was. I didn't know what programs they offered. I didn't know anything about it. So then I went to the guidance office at school and I looked through the paper catalog until I found it. And I read the little write-up about it. And I applied to, you know, a handful of schools, whatever, maybe six, I think. And I got into all of them, but of course I got into Drexel and that's where I went. And people would say to me, what if you don't get in? And I would just say, well, that's not even possible. That's where I'm going. That's not getting in there isn't even like, it's not even in the realm of possibility because that's where I'm supposed to be. So I have a different kind of a strange path to where I ended up. But I just knew, my intuition just knew that that's where I was meant to be. And then once my husband and I met, and now we've been together for 30 years, married for 24. I mean, I just understand that the college I was meant to go to had meaning far beyond my career. And so, you know, I just think that, like you and I were saying earlier, there's so, in a different conversation, there's so many factors that go into what you choose to do when you graduate from high school. And if you choose to go to college, where you choose to go, there's so many factors that you can't even, there's no possible way you can see some of them like that one, like the two I just shared. And so I think to give the parents the message and kids to reduce the stress, do the best they can, communicate about what it is the young person likes to do, what they're good at, like you talk about, and just go with doing the best that you can. And if you go there and you find out it's not the best match, then look for somewhere different.
I think that's such an interesting notion. And when I speak to my students and their families as well, kind of about this journey, something that might not be what they want to hear, but I do believe is that you are exactly where you are meant to be in this moment right now.
Yes. And
when it comes to applying to college, oftentimes, especially for students who are shooting for those colleges that are difficult, there are many students who apply and they accept less than 4% of the students who apply. Oftentimes, that's the first time students get rejected, right? It's the first time, yes, they don't get what they think they want, or they feel like they've done everything possible, and perhaps they have. And sometimes the decision is just not because of those metrics. There could be other things. There could be a student who's exactly like you, and yet they come from a state that didn't have very many applicants, and so they chose that other student, right? And it had nothing to do with anything you had control over. And that disappointment is hard, right? It's hard to be rejected in any notion, right? But especially around this phase where students feel like they've worked so hard and they didn't get into where they want to go. But I believe that whether or not you get into that school, you don't, or if you had like the determination of Aaron Taylor here, of this is the school I'm getting into and it happens, I think that where you end up prepares you for the next step in life. And you might not know what that's going to be. Like for the student you mentioned earlier, she was rejected from what she thought was her dream school, and yet it turned out for the better for the totality of her life, right? And not just the more short-sighted notion of this was my dream school I wanted to get into for an Ivy League. And so I do think that some parts of this too are just outside of our control, and taking comfort in knowing that whatever situation is happening right now, whether it is exactly as you thought it was going to be or not, that there is a purpose for it to prepare you for the next phase in life is what I tell my students to also be prepared for the rejection, to be prepared for things not going the way that you anticipate, because that's life. That's how life goes, right? We may have all the intentions of what we think things are going to be. Even looking back at my 2020, and I'm a planner, this was the first year where I felt like I am planning everything early. I am booking every flight for every family travel. I am planning all my kids' parties way early. I have a child born in July, born in October. I booked the venues and the vendors and everything months in advance. And I thought, this is the year. I've got everything planned. And, you know, 2020 had different plans. That's just life, right? Is that you think things are lined up the way that you think they will be. And there are things that are just outside of your control. But being able to learn through that experience, the resiliency that that does bring you, the opportunity to be able to be flexible through it, I think is important for not just college, but for life in general.
I think that is a perfect note to wrap up our conversation on today. And I just really love, Mary Grace, what you do and how the spirit that you bring to the work that you do. I just really, really do. I think that any family who is looking for guidance to help their kids navigate this college admissions process should absolutely reach out to you, because you understand the bigger picture, and it's not just about getting into the top 10 schools, and it's not just that. It's far, far more, and you really help families to see that and to understand that and to work with that larger understanding. And so I just really love the work that you do, and I want to know where people can connect with you. And of course, I'll put the links in the show notes too. But also, you had a free thing you wanted to offer to my listeners.
Yes. Yeah, so if you are the parent of a student in grades 9 through 12, I invite you to check out the College Prep checklist.com. And what you'll get is access to your free download, which goes through a checklist. Like I mentioned, I'm big on organization, of things to do from grades 9 through 12 to better prepare students with discovering their passions and figuring out the steps to be better prepared for college. Now, it's not just about the classes and extracurriculars and SATs. It also goes through some items to think about regarding your child's preparation for other skills, soft skills as well. And just to give an example, one of the items on that checklist before grade 12 is for students to think about what centers them and how will they make sure they return to a practice that allows them to center themselves, whatever that might mean for them, before entering the difficulty of college prep in 12th grade. So it's not your typical checklist. It's a more holistic perspective of how students can prepare. And so I invite you to check it out at thecollegeprepchecklist.com.
I love it. And then where can they find more about you and connect with you?
Sure thing. And so if you'd like to visit my website, you can check me out at theyoungprofessionista.com. And there you'll see some of my other free workshops and classes out there and information on my upcoming programs.
So exciting. Thank you, Mary Grace, for chatting with me today. And I think you shared some wonderful things to help families who have older teens or high schoolers, let's say, moving their way through their high school years. And so I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks, Erin. It was such a pleasure.
Okay, that wraps up today's episode. Wherever you are in this world, I hope that you make it a very aware and connected day. That wraps up this episode of Powerful Parenting for Today's Kids. If you know anyone who could benefit from this episode or this podcast in general, please share it with them. Also, I always love hearing feedback from my listeners. I welcome you to send me an email to Erin@erin-taylor.com if you have any comments or questions that come up for you in an episode. Our children are our future. Parenting them is the most sacred task we will ever be asked to do. It truly does take a village to raise a child. Let's help each other to raise our children to be who it is they are meant to be. If at any point you feel like you need a little extra help and support, reach out to me. I am here to help you.